This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We begin today with a controversial new study about the clergy sexual abuse crisis that has rocked the Catholic Church over the past 10 years. The report is already sparking controversy and debate about the origins of the crisis and about how the church has responded to it.
The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops paid in part for the study, and the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York conducted it. Among the findings, priests were poorly trained. But the study appears to deflect at least some responsibility away from the church, suggesting that the epidemic of abuse of priests was part of a larger problem of sexual abuse of children across the entire U.S.
The report is today's talker on Radio Boston. And to start, joining us from New York City is David Gibson. He's reporter for Religion News Service, and he broke this story on the Religion News Service website last night. David Gibson, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Good to be here.
It's great to have you. So as you heard Anthony say, one of the major findings from this report was that abusive priests were actually part of a larger problem in American culture at the time. We're going to get to that in just a moment. But what were some of the other major findings out of this John Jay study?
Well, I think some of the major findings that will upend some popular misconceptions about the abuse crisis and perhaps, you know, unsettle some people on the left and right is, for one thing, that celibacy was not a major cause or any cause of this sexual abuse crisis. They found that, you know, there were men that had been celibate for centuries or tried to be celibate, and that abuse of children has gone up and down at various periods. They also found that that the increase in the number of gay men in the priesthood, which a lot of commentators have taken note of, especially since the 1980s, really had no correlation to the sexual abuse of children. One, that gay men, homosexuals, were not more likely to abuse children than straight priests, and also that influx of gay men into the priesthood in the 80s actually corresponded with a sharp decrease in the number of abuse cases.
So right there we have two findings, one which may not sit well with the conservatives, the other which may not sit well with liberal critics of the church. There was also a finding, I believe, that you reported that said that of the 6,000 or so accused priests that the report looked at, fewer than 4% could actually be considered as pedophiles.
Yeah, I think that's really going to be a lightning rod for, you know, criticism and discussion. I think it's the researchers at John Jay, who are top-notch criminologists and experts in this field, you know, they do point out, I mean, the popular view is that any adult who sexually abuses, touches a minor, anyone under 18, is a pedophile. Well, that's really not the case. A pedophile is a real pathological person who's attracted only to girls and boys under the age of, let's say, well, prepubescent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kids who haven't gone through puberty whatsoever. That's what they're attracted to. But these researchers, in trying to figure out which priests, how many priests were actually pedophiles, you know, these kind of serial predators, put the age at under 11, so only priests who abuse kids 10 and under. And, of course, a lot of people would say, well, you know, 13 would seem to be a more, you know, accepted number. And if you put the number at 13, then you'd have the percentage of actual pathological predators up higher at something like 10%.
So it would seem by changing the age by which pedophiles are defined, it inherently reduces the number of problem priests.
Yes, or the number of predators within that cohort of men who had legitimate accusations of abuse against them.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so that the vast majority were not these kind of serial predators, but actually were, you know, one or two time or three time abusers who were responding to situational stresses and things like that. And again, that's another controversial aspect of this, the idea that you're kind of sounding like you're explaining away or you're offering reasons because some priest abused a child.
Well, last question for you. I mean, and this is sort of the other real big lightning rod that's come out of the report. It states, and here's a quote, "The documented rise in cases of abuse in the 1960s and 70s is similar to the rise in other types of, quote, deviant behavior in society and coincides with social change during this time period." So reading that, does it sound as if the report in part absolves the church of responsibility, just saying, you know, things were different back in the 60s?
No, I think that's the way some people are reading it, and I think that's too simplistic. Basically, it's saying, yes, I mean, there were, everybody got ambushed by the 60s. I mean, there was divorce, crime, all sorts of, again, in their clinical sociologist terms, deviance, social deviance. But also they're noting that what happened to these priests is that many of them, the vast majority who abused children in the 60s and 70s when most of this abuse happened, were educated in seminaries in the 40s and 50s in a very kind of repressed, you know, isolated environment. And so it was really a combination of how they were educated before with the social upheaval that they just couldn't, you know, come to terms with or were reveling in or whatever. And you had a lot of this kind of just, you know, men who are just not prepared psychologically or in any other way to deal with this thing.
David Gibson, I'm sorry to cut you off there, but we've got to move on briefly. Thank you so much for your time. David Gibson is the correspondent for Religion News Service.
Thank you.
And we're joined now by Professor Karen Terry of the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. She was the principal investigator of the study and has just come from a press conference in Washington, D.C., where the report was released. And thanks so much for joining us, Dr. Terry.
Thank you, Anthony.
So this report, some 300 pages, lots to sort through. But let me get you to respond right away to some of the reaction that we've already heard, and that is that it appears to deflect responsibility for the sexual abuse away from the Catholic Church, at least in part, by blaming the culture of the time. Your response to that?
Well, I think there are a couple of things to consider. First of all, there's the abuse cases themselves, which did rise in the 60s and 70s and are following the same pattern as other types of deviant behavior in society. That is, in fact, true. And there was also a marked decline in the 80s and 90s at a time when we also saw certain types of crime rates declining. However, one other thing to consider is that the response to these abuse allegations happened many years later, because most of these cases of abuse that happened in the 60s and 70s were actually reported decades later. And so what we see the bishops dealing with now is the response to those abuse cases. And our report looks not only at the causes of the abuse, but also what the responses are to that abuse.
And what does it find about the responses to the abuse, specifically by the church?
Well, it finds quite a mixed response, in fact. There are a number of individuals who began discussing this problem with the National Conference of Catholic Bishops beginning in 1985. That's the first time that they discussed it as a group. They discussed it every year after that, and by 1992, they had created these five principles for responding to abuse, which is this really ideal set of how one should respond to cases of child sexual abuse. And unfortunately, those were not implemented consistently across all dioceses in the United States. And so what we see is that there are some bishops who led this initiative, who are very forward, who are acting vigorously against these in response to the abuse, while others really lag behind. And a lot of what we're seeing in the media are those individuals who did not implement this these five principles very thoroughly or very effectively, and their response was inadequate.
Hmm. Now, the report says, quote, the peak of the crisis has passed. To what do you attribute that, and does that mean, or does the report sort of make such a broad conclusion that the church has responded adequately?
No. Well, so once again, what I would say is it's important to distinguish between when the abuse actually occurred and when we understood those reports of abuse and also what our responses are to it now. So in terms of what we're calling the crisis, it's that peak of abuse cases in the 60s and 70s. And what we see is that even though more cases of abuse are reported every year, it still follows that same distribution of offenses over that time period. So every year now that cases are reported, there's still a peak in the 60s and 70s with a very sharp decline in the 80s and 90s. And that's happened every year that we've studied this problem, beginning in 2002.
Well, no surprise, Professor Terry, that of course the response comes fast and furious. A lot of people were caused an awful amount of, awful lot of harm over the years.
Yes.
One of the questions that I think will be raised is, how can this report be objective if it was paid for, at least in part, by the church? The question's bound to be raised. What's your response to that?
The church gave us a certain amount of funding for the study. We received matching funds from a number of other private foundations as well as the federal government. And we were not responsible to the bishops for this project. They, the National Review Board, which is a lay group of Catholics, actually commissioned us to conduct this study. we were selected through a competitive RFP process to conduct this study. And we did not take advice from the bishops. We did have to ask for their cooperation with some of the data collection process. However, we also collected data from many, many other sources. And so we presented this report to them today, and they just got this report as it was released this week as well.
Sure. And do you feel that you got the cooperation that you needed as an independent researcher and investigator? Did you get the cooperation from the church that you would have required?
We did get cooperation from the church. We did get a high level of cooperation from the church. But again, I would emphasize that even though we did get a substantial amount of information from the church, we also collected data from many other sources. So some of the critics have said they can't trust our data if it just comes from the diocese and from the bishops. However, we also worked with several treatment centers and got a number of clinical files for priests who had allegations of abuse. We also worked with victim advocates, victim assistance coordinators, and various others who would know about this problem of abuse. So again, we are confident in the report and in the findings that we presented.
Well, there's a lot to consider in the report, and thank you so much for taking time out to talk to us about it. We appreciate it, Professor Terry.
All right, thank you.
That's Professor Karen Terry of the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. She was the principal investigator of the study, The Causes and Context of Sexual Abuse of Minors by Catholic Priests in the U.S. from 1950 to 2010.
Stay with us, because when we return, our conversation about today's report on the clergy sex abuse crisis will continue. We'll have more reaction and take your calls. We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. We're going to continue now with our discussion of this new report about the sexual abuse by Catholic priests. If you're just joining us, we're talking about a report paid for in part by the Catholic Church. It was conducted by the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York. We're joined in the studio right now by Father Walter Kunin. He's Catholic chaplain and coordinator of the Interfaith Chaplaincy at Brandeis University. He was a thoughtful and fairly outspoken voice during the height of the clergy sex abuse scandal. Father Kunin, good to have you.
Thank you. A pleasure to be here.
Also joining us, Walter Robinson. He's a professor of journalism at Northeastern University. He was also the head of the Boston Globe Spotlight team that investigated the Boston clergy sex abuse crisis in 2002. And few people in the city know more about this story than Walter Robinson. And it's great to have you on the show, Walter. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Anthony. And good day, Father Kunin.
Thank you. Nice to have two Walters on the show at the same time.
Less confusing for me. And I want to invite our listeners to jump right into this conversation. What do you make of this study, what you've heard about it? Does it move your understanding of the clergy sex abuse scandal forward in any way? Does it help the church put this issue behind it? What do you think? Will it help the church, or do you sense sort of some deflection here? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Father Kunin, let me start with you and ask you simply, from what you've been able to read and gather about this study, what do you think?
Well, I had a couple of thoughts when I saw it in the paper this morning, and then it's just been officially released. One, I thought it was good on the part of the bishops that they actually would spend the money and have this kind of a study done. I thought it showed a real desire to try to understand the nature of the crisis. I think the important thing here will be what we do with the study. In other words, for example, how will we analyze the data? Will we, for example, in the Archdiocese of Boston, maybe gather all of the priests together with an expert to go through it so we can understand what could we do differently going down the road? Or how do we understand the data itself? And I thought one of the most important pieces, and it was mentioned earlier, is that it makes it very clear that homosexuality is not responsible for sexual abuse. Because that's been something all through this crisis that you've read about. And it's very bad for all gay people, of course, to have that kind of negative standing. So I think those are some of the things that stand out to me.
One of the things that stood out as well was their conclusion that celibacy not playing a role in this. What do you make of that?
Right. And I think that's been true all through this period. People have analyzed celibacy. I would say only one thing about it. I often, just as from my point of view, I often wondered during the whole crisis period, had we, for example, had a lot of priests who were married with children, when accusations arrived, would we have responded differently? I mean, just if you have your own kids, I think you're more visually like, oh my gosh, this is a child. I don't know. That's just totally my speculation. But I don't think celibacy per se is tied into sexual abuse.
Mm. Walter Robinson, I want to get sort of a general reaction to you, but I'd love to just jump right into some of the numbers here. Much of this study was a really an empirical report, the result of surveys of Catholic dioceses across the country. And there's some numbers that I just want to ask you about that they came up with. Between 1950 and 2000, they say there were allegations of abuse against almost 4,400 priests. That's about 4% of all priests. Are those numbers, how do those numbers strike you based on the reporting that you did?
Well, you know, I'd like to start by, it was either Disraeli or Mark Twain who said there are lies, damn lies, and statistics. And I applaud the John Jay College for making this effort and Karen Terry for her research. But number one, the number of accused priests cited is unreliable and it is low. The number is actually up to 5,900 now. But let me give you one example. In the Boston Catholic Archdiocese, where there was probably more disclosure than any other archdiocese in the country, in that 52-year period, there were estimated to be 240 priests who had credible allegations against them. In the New York Archdiocese, there were only 49. And the reason for that is simple. In New York and in many other dioceses, the records were destroyed. And so when the reporting was done in 2002 and 2003, many dioceses underreported the numbers. So that's the first thing. What troubles me the most or concerns me the most as a reporter is this notion that this activity peaked in the 1960s and the 1970s. Mm-hmm. And therefore, well, where do we look to explain that? Well, we look to the so-called rise in deviant behavior in that period, although why divorce would be included in that, I don't know. But in fact, I would submit, and I think the evidence is in their own report, that the incidents did not, in fact, increase in the 60s and 70s. It was the reporting of it starting in the 90s that caused that blip. Mm. And in fact, that the likelihood is great that the incidence of abuse in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s was just as high and perhaps maybe even higher than the 60s and the 70s. I don't dispute, nor do I think anyone, that the incidence of abuse has gone down markedly since it became a public issue, and before that, when therapists and law enforcement officials began to take this issue far more seriously than they had before, say, the 1980s and 1990s.
Sure. Father Kunin, Walter raises an interesting point, and I want to sort of throw that at you. This idea that's in the study, the documented rise in cases of abuse in the 1960s and 70s, is similar to the rise in other types of deviant behavior. Later on, they refer to deviant behavior, as Walter said, divorce, drugs, a bunch of other things. How does that part of the report strike you?
I didn't care for that part of the report because I think it's just taking that one period of time and saying that's why this has happened. Yes, everybody is subject to the time they live in, and the world was different then. But a lot of great things happened in that period, too. The development of women's rights, for example, a whole new way of seeing justice in the world, civil rights, the Vietnam War protests. That was not deviant behavior. That was very positive. So I think it's too limited just to put sexual abuse into that time frame. Because I think sexual abuse is a problem that actually goes through all kinds of periods. Mm. I felt a little bit funny with that report, although I trust the John Jay Group. I mean, they're a reputable organization, so I don't know how they did that research.
Listeners, we're talking about a new report from the John Jay School of Criminal Justice about the Catholic clergy sex abuse crisis. Give us a call at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK, if you have questions or comments. With us, Walter Robinson, professor of journalism at Northeastern University, as well as Father Walter Kunin from Brandeis University. And let's take a call from Martina, who's calling from North Andover. Hi, Martina.
Yes, hi, John. Thank you for taking my call.
Happy to do it.
I have a question in relation to a main point that was made earlier, that there had been a rise in deviant behavior. And I wondered, where else in society has there been a deviant behavior, a rise in deviant behavior on the same scale? Can, you know, the person who had mentioned that, can they name where it wasn't in a teacher population, not in nurse population, not within other churches where priests can marry? And just another thing I wanted to mention is divorce is not a deviant behavior, and to say so is it's deflecting from the real issue.
Sure, and I think Walter Robinson suggested that. But as to your question about where else in society has there been a rise in deviant behavior, are you talking about where else has there been the kind of problem that we've seen?
Yeah, exactly. Within any other population, where the study says that there was a rise across the world. Where was it?
Well, let me, Walter, do you want to take on that question?
Well, I don't think there was a rise. I mean, in the United States, one hopes there has been a fall off. I mean, one thing we need to remember in the context in all of these discussions is the vast amount of sexual abuse in this country occurs in the family. And that remains probably the most intractable and hidden part of this problem. But to suggest, for instance, as the report does, and I would call this the third rail finding of this report, that we can blame the 60s for a rise in sexual abuse by priests, when in fact it probably didn't rise at all in that period. I think that's wrong.
Yeah.
And the sad thing is that it tends to overshadow what I think most people consider is the major cause for the high rate of abuse, and that is the church's practice for decades of covering up, keeping quiet, and in some cases, by their assignment patterns, facilitating the abuse by priests like John Gagan, who probably had several hundred victims.
Yeah, Father Kunin, I was struck by that as well. The report, and I haven't been able to read through all 300 pages of it, but it doesn't seem to address the sort of the internal structural problems of the church that led to one of the issues that Walter Robinson was referring to there, and that is, you know, specifically allowing abusive priests to be moved from parish to parish where they often abused again.
Well, I think that's a very good point, because so often this crisis is called the sexual abuse crisis. And, of course, it is, and the sexual abuse of children was terrible. But for so many Catholics and other people, the crisis is the covering up of the sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a piece that I think does sometimes get lost. That's why I applaud the bishops for initiating this study, if it will lead to something deeper. But it was the covering up or the systems of the church structure that prevented it. And I think the woman who spoke from North Andover, where I was first assigned as a newly ordained priest, made a good point. To mention divorce as deviant behavior is not even keeping with Catholic Church teaching. We welcome divorced people. We want to work with divorced people. And it's too bad that that has to be lumped in there together. But I think that's something. And I also, in reading the report that I did, just the general survey thing, I think it does list the bishops who abused as well. But so often in these reports, it's the priest sexual abuse crisis. Well, which it is, of course, but also bishops as well. And the covering up is the part of the structural problem that surrounded this issue.
Mm. Let me bring another voice into this conversation. Anne Barrett Doyle joins us by phone from Washington, D.C. She's with bishopaccountability.org, which advocates for victims of clergy sex abuse. And Anne Barrett Doyle, good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Now, I understand you've just come from the press conference which took place at the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops and where this report was released. Give me your quick reaction to it.
Well, I should say, Anthony, that they wouldn't have let me into the press conference. I'm coming from the fringes of the press conference, but I've read all the summaries. What surprised me about today's report, you know, we expected this report to let the bishops off the hook. You know, after all, the surveys that the bishops themselves filled out with no one looking over their shoulder, you know, John Jay did not send researchers into the secret archives. The bishops or their aides filled out this data all by themselves. And so it's extremely flawed and suspect data. And additionally, the surveys that they filled out omitted some really crucial questions.
Such as?
Really helped. Well, for instance, they did not ask bishops or church officials if they called law enforcement when they heard an allegation. They asked them about all sorts of other responses they made, but not that very crucial one. They never asked if bishops made an effort to find out if the accused priest had other victims, because the answer to that would have been very incriminating and embarrassing. And in fact, the answer to that would have stolen the most important and the most erroneous piece of data in this report, which is that the majority of priests had only one victim.
Well,
the reason bishops can say that with a straight face is that they made sure the victims were silenced. They kept the names of priests quiet, and so when you conceal the names of abusers, additional victims don't come forward. But we have tracked dioceses where bishops have, a few of them have posted lists of accused priests, and in every single one of those dioceses, the majority of accused priests have multiple victims. Mm. That's because when the church puts out the information, when they really care about reaching out to victims, victims feel safe to come forward and say, I was abused too.
Ann Barrett Doyle, stand by. I want to ask Walter Robinson on this point. Walter, I did look at some of the some of the numbers in this report, and I know you have. The report does contain some numbers on priests who abused multiple times, but I'm wondering if you had a look at it and compare what you saw with what Ann Barrett Doyle was just talking about there.
Well, I think Ann is correct. It very, very rarely was there a case, particularly in the Boston Archdiocese, where we got extensive records, where a priest accused credibly had only one victim. I mean, it was so rare. Most had several. Some, the so-called pedophiles who preyed on younger children, had hundreds of victims.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this report talks about 10,000 victims nationwide. As of, I think, in the 2004 report, two priests in Boston alone, Father Gagan and Father Porter from Fall River, had over 300 known victims, and that doesn't count probably an additional 700 or 800 victims who never came forward.
Mm. Well, speaking of victims, we've got some comments on our website I want to read. Mary writes on our website, radioboston.org, "The lack of responsibility that the Catholic Church continues to take for the abuse is a slap in the face to the survivors of such detrimental actions." Let's take a call from Jerry, who's calling from Danvers. Hi, Jerry. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm listening to your guest, and I'm truly amazed also and agree with some of them about the church seems to have been excused with this report. I was a victim at the age of 9 in the 1950s. I don't know what that had to do with the 60s, not that I'm necessarily, you know, a symbol of everybody that was abused, but the very notion that it had to do with the culture is just beyond me. It's the institutional church, and it's the cover-up. In my case, this priest, I learned now that I'm considerably older, that he was transferred from my parish to be the pastor of a children's orphanage.
Mm-hmm.
And I know through some of the things that I've discovered when I pursued this, that some people in the church knew that this was going on, and that's why he was transferred. I mean, again, it comes down to the institution of the church.
And so there's nothing that you've heard in the coverage, Jerry, that would suggest that the church has sort of moved toward owning up to that to that problem there?
Well, as an institution, it is not. I think there are individuals, including many good bishops, who want to move the church to make even more of a stand, but as an institution, it is not owned to it, up to it at all. I mean, they should be going to parishes throughout the country and soliciting from their older parishioners the stories from their past.
Sure.
Have they done that? No. And if they did that sincerely, they would learn this was an incredibly pervasive problem.
Jerry, thanks so much for the call. We appreciate it. Let's take another one. Dennis is calling from Belmont. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. I'm a little disappointed that this study is being sponsored by the Catholic Church itself. And even worse, they basically seem to think that the priests are not guilty or haven't been cannot be implicated in all this. It just takes away some of the credibility. reality of the Catholic Church.
Dennis, thanks so much for the call. Father Kunin, let me come back to you. Two calls there. This is sort of a big, big picture question, but the damage that was done was so profound and affected people so much. I'm wondering if the church could have done anything in a report like this to try to restore faith with some of the folks we've just heard from.
I don't really know. I do know that the John Jay group is a serious group.
Absolutely.
Now,
yep.
Whether it could have been conducted differently or if they had been allowed to actually see the records themselves, that maybe would have been different. But I think when I read about it this morning, I had the same sort of reaction that people are going to take it as like the church is off the hook. I mean, I don't think the church did it for that reason. They really wanted to find out what was behind all of this abuse. My hope is that it could be used now to really do something about it and to do the transformation of the church that needs to happen so that this kind of thing doesn't happen again.
Right. Well, let's get another call. Alan is calling from Beverly. Hi, Alan.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I had really a two-part comment. One is I find it somewhat outrageous that the abuse of children, the rape and molestation of children, is somehow being equated or tied to shifting cultural norms. I don't remember the 60s and the 70s okaying the abuse of power where an adult could go ahead and do what they wanted to do with a child. And I think it's really quite offensive to suggest that somehow the sexual revolution somehow being child rape. I know that's not what the report exactly says, but that's the connotation. And it's really quite disturbing. I think the other part that I'd like to hear some commentary about is, I think child molesters and pedophiles, they occur in society. They're in, probably every country and every society that we know about. I'm not a person who's versed in why a person might go down this road, but I think everyone else is accountable to the law. When you molest a child, you go to prison if you're caught. And what really disturbs me is the fact that there was an institutional move to cover up continually a problem that's there. And I'll take my comment, the response off air. Thank you very much.
Well, of course, Walter Robinson, you folks at The Globe did an awful lot of reporting on exactly that issue. I wonder if you want to at least make a comment to our caller there.
On which point?
Well, on the point that this sort of institutional cover-up, I guess, of clergy sex abuse that went on during that time.
Well, we have to remember the role that the Catholic Church played in our upbringing. And in my case, I was raised Catholic and went to 12 years of Catholic school, that it was the dominant force for good in our lives, and priests were revered. And so when this happened, particularly in the 50s, 60s, and 70s are the years that we're familiar with, the victims seldom said anything.
Right.
And when their parents found out, the parents often did nothing because they were so horrified, or Father so-and-so, and we wrote about cases like this, said, oh, I won't do it again. And back in the day, the church was treated with such deference that police and prosecutors often looked the other way. And I think society didn't start to pay close attention to this until the 1980s and 1990s. And, I mean, the fact of the matter is you add that together with the cover-up, and you have a situation where Catholic priests in the Boston area, about 7% of the priests over this period of time were credibly accused of sexual abuse of children. And that is a percentage which is substantially higher, as far as we know, than that of any other caregiving or religious institution.
Hmm. Ann Barrett-Doyle. Yeah, Ann, I was just going to ask you to jump in. We only have about a half a minute left, but jump right in there. The question I was going to ask you is, what has to happen next? What would you like to see happen next?
Well, I guess I was going to sort of address that. I think there have to be truly independent investigations of the Catholic Church. Every time a public prosecutor has investigated a diocese, he or she has found many, many more abusers and many more victims than the bishops had told the public. But I just want to just address one thing that Walter Robinson was getting. I agree with everything he said, except I will say that the cover-up continues. You know, here in the Boston Archdiocese, Cardinal O'Malley has yet to release a list of accused priests. And he admitted in some diocesan minutes recently that the list he might release has the names of 40 credibly accused priests who are deceased. Well, you can be sure that by Cardinal O'Malley sitting on that list, additional victims of those still unnamed priests won't be able to come forward in time to file a case. The statute of limitations will lapse, and so the cover-up is continuing.
Ian Baradil, I want to politely cut you off there just because I want to give Father Walter Kunin the last word here. Obviously, Father, the scars run deep. The story continues. Do you think this report helps the church in any way?
I think it could help the church if we really take the data and start to evaluate it and get discussions going with priests and bishops. Again, I can't vouch for the data. It may be flawed, as others have said, but I think this was an attempt to at least begin to understand it. If we look at what's happening in Ireland, where the church was so heavily involved with the culture, as the Catholic Church was in Boston, this is ruining the church in Ireland. It's a tremendous problem. It will take generations to heal. So I think there's been some progress made, and hopefully we can begin to put this. We can never put it behind us. We have to learn from it and reform ourselves.
Reform ourselves and maybe start the healing. Father Walter Kunin, he's a Catholic chaplain and coordinator of the Interfaith Chaplaincy at Brandeis University. Thanks so much for coming in.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Walter Robinson, professor of journalism at Northeastern University. He was also head of the Boston Globe Spotlight team that investigated the Boston clergy sex abuse. Walter, thank you so much.
Thank you, Anthony.
And Ann Barrett Doyle with bishopaccountability.org. Ann, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Anthony.
Coming up after the break, President Barack Obama is in town, shaking hands and raising money. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks with Magna Chakra Party. This is Radio Boston.